Okay, Esther, I'll go ahead and turn it over to you.
All right, I will call this meeting to order at 10 o'clock. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you. Okay, we'll go ahead and do a roll call. Esther Curry.
Here.
Teresa Beck. Janet Claire.
Here.
Mary Cordes.
Here.
Sarah Isaacs.
She's here and she's in the chat.
I'm here.
Okay, thank you, Sarah. April Jensen.
Here.
Susan McKinney.
Here.
Jennifer Slack. Paula Treader. Sandy West.
Here.
Diane Yeoman.
Here.
Okay, thanks, everybody. All right, did you all have a chance to take a look at the minutes from the August 11th, 2022 meeting?
This is Sandy. I'll move to motion that these be approved as they were sent out and written.
This is Susan. I'll second it.
All those in favor, we'll do a roll call. Esther Curry?
Yes.
Janet Claire?
Yes.
Mary Cordes?
Yes.
Sarah Isaacs?
Yes.
Who?
Is somebody?
Sarah said yes.
Yeah. She's got some background noise, though, when she comes off mute.
All right. April Jensen?
Yes.
Susan McKinney?
Yes.
Sandy West?
Yes.
Diane Yeoman?
Yes.
Okay, great. Motion approved. Thank you. Okay, so I do have a few things for you, and so I am going to go ahead and just give you a brief update. We do have some good news. Our Ben Gill Elementary School, which is in Gillespie, they have gone live, so we're so excited that we have them as a new member. We also are exploring some grant opportunities. I know that you had probably heard that Leslie Zavaduke had moved over to a consulting position with us doing grant applications. And so she's got her eye on quite a few different things for different types of projects. And so we're so excited that she's working on that for us. And so she's working for the IHLS side as well as SHARE. So it's kind of a multifaceted approach. But if I have additional information, I will certainly let you know as that continues to move forward. I also wanted to update the committee on the texting issue. There was the issue with text not going out to AT&T customers, and there were some technology issues on the type of text message it is, which the SMTP protocol versus the SMS, which is the more current method. What we did is we were able to switch everything over to what's called an MMS technology and register with AT&T. We think that this has solved the issue, but we are continuing to look at alternative solutions. The alternative solution would require a considerable bit of programming on our end, and so it's not a quick and easy project, unfortunately. The switching to MMS, that was I don't think is a permanent solution, but hopefully it seems to be working better. We haven't been getting the volume of concerns of people not getting their notifications, but we are going to continue keeping an eye on that and working on that and maybe considering a third party vendor. We did reach out to a company called Twilio that does text messaging. And so we've got some pricing that was very reasonable. We also, that's the one that requires a great deal of programming. And we want to make sure that it's just right as soon as we activate it. So we don't want to rush into anything with that. We also reached out to a company called Patron Point, which does the library marketing platform. And the initial feeling was it's way outside of our budget, unfortunately. And so I don't think that that's going to be a solution for us, but I will keep you up to date if we have any additional information.
Cassandra?
Yes.
Hey, did that change for all text messaging? So we're hoping that it doesn't cause other issues with other carriers.
Right now, we just changed it just for those who are AT&T customers. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We did not mess with anything if they were Verizon or Sprint, only AT&T got that swap.
And I will say, as an AT&T customer that's never been able to get text messages, I started getting text messages last week.
Oh, wonderful.
Yay.
That's
good.
That's great, Susan.
I've always had to be email because I didn't get my notices by text. So this is awesome.
I've got a couple of staff who have AT&T, so I'm going to have to track with them and see how they're doing. So
wonderful. Thanks, Esther.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, that's great to hear. And again, we will continue because we know it's a technology issue. As texting technology has changed, we will continue looking at that. Dina, I'm going to give Dina a minute to just let you all know that she had been working with Polaris on this. Of course, she's getting these love letters and the phone calls, you know, as people are not getting the technology is not working as expected. And they had told her, you know, that that's a enhancement request, you know, for their roadmap. They do kind of an idea lab, which upvotes different issues to what needs to be developed next. And she sent them a beautifully written email about how this is not an enhancement request. This is you supporting your own technology. And so she did a great job working with Polaris and being very assertive with them. So I'm just wanted to give her a pat on the back for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I also have some good news about the Share Mobile Library updates. We are still working with Solus on some additional recommendations that we've gotten from members. And so as soon as I get back from ILA, I'm going to try to work with them again to schedule a meeting. But I do have good news. I did see that it looks like the content notes have been resolved. So those are now showing up appropriately and as expected. So Susan, I think that was one of your requests, that instead of seeing, so it's content notes, and there was another field that are coming through now, but you can see song titles in there now. And so it looks like that has been fixed. And so the other biggest request that we have gotten is to add a filter for just your library. And so that was a Polaris, again, an enhancement request that was on their roadmap. And so hopefully we will see some momentum with that soon as well. And so that's what I have for you for the Share Mobile Library. I also have some really good news about the McNaughton Book Leasing Program. One of the questions that we had gotten back had been in regards to the processing, like what do these books look like? Will it be really, you know, ugly or noticeable as part of the collection? So I actually had Jace work on a blurb to send out to everybody so you can actually see what they look like. They do have the green band at the bottom, but they're not too terrible. And it does have the library's name for the equivalent of a property stamp. We also got a lot of feedback that libraries wanted to do their own selection, and we were so glad that we've been working with Brodart, who manages that McNaughton program. They are going to start an option where you can do selection. And so basically we're going to keep the automation piece where they will put the items in a cart. And you can go in and say, oh, you know what, I don't want that Brad Meltzer, I'd rather have the Daniel Steele, and you can switch it. It's a difference in the way of thinking. And so we have instead of thinking it's $21 per book, it's that, and then you'd get 5 books a month, for example. It's not per book, it's called an allotment, which is how they do their pricing. And so it's $21 per book if you got 5 books, but they actually give you 6 allotments. So if you're above the cutoff of $29, that is actually going to cost 2 allotments instead of just 1. So they gave us some wiggle room. So you could get some of the really high demand titles that are maybe a little bit more expensive. And so with that, we're going to have to revise communications, and we're doing that with the existing customers to kind of explain that difference between per book pricing versus it's a lease program for those allotments. And so we're working on that with our current users so they can try it out if they're interested. If not, if they like it as is, they don't have to do anything different. They're still going to get their books as expected. But it's a pilot program, so the people who were interested in getting some selection may be able to have that option in the future. We're also going to ask BroadArt to include large print titles. They are almost always going to be above the $29 threshold for an allotment because they are just, they're more expensive to print. And so with that, if you do have a population that is looking for large print, then that might be a good option. I had also gotten some feedback that we were also interested in large print that's maybe not the best sellers, but people do exclusively purchase large print for their communities. And so we had an idea, and I'm just interested in feedback from this group, that if we offered that as a similar program, it would not be a true McNaughton. It would be leasing for large print and a trade paperback because that might be more affordable. And of course the front cover would be laminated and it would still include the property stamp and barcoding range that we have set up with them. But I'd love to hear what you guys think about that. Would you order a leased copy of a trade paperback, for example, if it's at the right price? And it would be a different pricing structure because, again, large prints are just more expensive to for them to make a profit. So just be interested to see what you guys thought about something like that.
I love the idea. we can't keep enough large print. And getting those authors that are different would be interesting. I think our large print community or the readers, they kind of lose out sometimes because they have to wait longer for those. So it'd be nice to have an option to get those faster.
I'll be honest, I'm not doing the McNaughton, so I really don't know that my opinion weighs, but I have a really good discount plan with Thorndike's Engage to get large prints. So I'm not going to be leasing books because I get 20% off all my titles. Okay. And I get trade paper or hardback.
Cassandra, this is Mary at Hainer. We do the same thing. We have Thorndike for ours. And then we also use Baker & Taylor for leasing. And we tend to get extra Baker & Taylor titles, even though they're not large print, for our homebound patrons. Exclusively for them. So I think it's something that sounds great. I just think it's probably not something that we would take advantage of.
Okay. Did anybody else have any feedback that you'd like to share? Okay. And then the last few little pieces, I also just wanted to give everyone an update on two other pieces that have come out of other committees. So I know that this group had thought that Aspen with Bywater Solutions would be the best fit for SHARE. And so that was sent to the Finance and Policy Committee. So they developed a pricing structure that if we have libraries that want the custom development, or excuse me, the custom discovery layer where your e-resources are integrated, that would be $2,500 additional per year for the libraries that want it. That includes EBSCO and full EBSCO integration, not a sideload. They also do sideloading of records for Gale as well. That includes records coming from OverDrive, Hoopla, and those types of services. And so if we had 25 libraries, that's the minimum number that we would need to move forward with the vendor at $2,500. Schools and libraries that would like to use just the what we're calling like the base discovery layer, which would be very similar to Solus, of just what everybody else would get would be $250 additional per year. And so if we get the interest, we would then consider taking it out to membership for a vote.
Sandra, you're going to have to refresh me. I'm sorry. We've got the Share Mobile app. What's the Aspen do for us? Is that a layer on top of the computer side of Share?
It is. It's a discovery layer that would integrate the e-resources. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so it integrates e-resources and databases, which I think is going to be really important for schools and some of our larger libraries that are really looking for that. And so, again, that is going to be totally dependent on participation. If we can get to those 25 libraries, at that point, we can move forward with the vendor, and then we would also be able to offer it to everybody. So I'm hoping to work with our representative to set up some demos for both school libraries and public libraries, so you all have a chance to look at it. We're also, they are also an exhibitor for us for IHLS Member Day. So if you want to take a look at it, it will be available as just a quick demo on Member Day as well. So if you wanted to see it. Does anybody have any questions about that?
I just had a question. Is that $2,500 per year?
Yes. Yeah. And I know that there was a lot of concern from, you know, other committees, this committee, about the cost, you know, that this might not be affordable for all libraries. But I think for the libraries that want it, really do want a product like this and might be able to make it affordable for everybody else. So we're really hopeful that that's going to be a solution for us. And I see a note from Sandy that they have a discovery layer with the Rin Lake College. And so she's put the link in there. So thank you, Sandy, for sharing that. Okay, with the Finance and Policy Committee, we have also been discussing an expansion of the affiliate program. And the purpose of that is to offer almost like a free trial to some of our school libraries to utilize the Share database as an interlibrary loan option to help support the argument that they would the administration would be more amenable to moving forward with membership, so they could actually see the benefit that they would be getting from that. And so we're working on a proposal with that committee and working out some of the details. And so as soon as we have that available, it'll be sent to review for all committees. And so as soon as I have that, I will certainly reach out. We're also, you might have seen the newsletter yesterday that we're asking for libraries to delay a Windows 11 upgrade just because we're having some issues with the remote access software. So it looks like there is a solution. If you've accidentally already upgraded, just reach out to IT department so we can get that set up. The last update that I had for everyone here today, we had some...
Before you go on, Cassandra, I was just going to warn people, I'm on a Windows 11 computer is what my personal computer is. And Windows, I had shut it down to travel. And when I opened it up, it actually tried to install the update and I had to pause it. So be very careful. Windows 11 is being very adamant. It wants to do these updates. And I found a way to turn it off for 5 weeks. So I'm hoping that'll give us enough time to get a permanent solution. So just a warning out there, even if you tell it to not do it, it's going to still keep trying every time you turn on your computer. So,
okay. Thank you very much for that, Susan. I appreciate it. Okay, and so the last thing I just wanted to mention, we've had a lot of movement in other committees of people stepping down or terms coming up, and this is a good time to remind everyone that if you are interested in stepping down, if you do not want to continue on this committee, that's certainly understandable. I've been saying, you know, that this committee volunteer work is not a life sentence. So if you are interested in stepping back, please feel free to let me know. No judgment. I think everybody knows that life changes and things get busier And so if that is a concern, please let me know. I am very thrilled that I think we have such a good group here. I don't necessarily want anybody to step down, but I don't want you to feel beholden that you couldn't if you didn't want to continue with this group. So it's just a good time of year to remind everybody as we have some committee movement. Does anybody
I was gonna say, I'd also add that I think I'm coming up on the end of my term limit for chairing, and I'm more than happy to stay on the committee, but members should start thinking about who might want to take that responsibility on when my term is up. So because I've done it for a while. Did it for a while some more. So glad to hand it over, but stay on board.
Yeah. Thank you, Esther. Okay. Does anybody have any questions for me?
Esther, I'm sorry, I'd stepped away for a moment. Are you saying you're almost off of the, I thought the search resource sharing didn't have a term limit.
For the chair.
The committee doesn't, but the chair does.
Oh, okay.
Because as chair, I'm a member of the executive council and
all
that. So, yeah.
So we have a bibliographic standards committee tomorrow, and Jennifer has prepared a proposal for that committee. I'd like to turn it over to her, and then if Dina has anything as well after Jennifer's completed, we'll just go for those updates. Jen?
Thanks, Cassie. So tomorrow we will be presenting a new training requirement that all barcoders in our system do refresher training every 2 years. We are seeing more and more violations of things that are covered in the initial training. So we're hoping that this will reduce that amount that we're having to contact libraries about or we go over and keep it fresh in everybody's minds. It'll also help with schools who do see a larger or higher rate of turnover in staff. So this way, everyone gets the same training. We keep it fresh. Also, it will ensure that everyone is actually completing the training and unfortunately not just turning on the videos and letting them play. We've had instances where we've noticed that that may have been happening with questions that were asked of us. So we're hoping the training will go live in February after member vote, as long as it is passed. And then all barcoders in the system will have till December 31st of next year to complete it. If the training isn't completed by that point, their permissions will be turned off until it is completed. And I'm more than happy to take any questions via here or via email.
Real quick, Jennifer. So if we're a cataloging library and I'm a cataloger, does that also apply to the barcoding? Or am I going to have to do the barcoding training? I mean, I've been doing it a long time.
That is the thing that will be debated tomorrow, I have a feeling. There are people who think that everybody should do it. There are others who feel like we cover and repeat ourselves enough in the cataloger's training sessions about these reminders that it's not necessary for catalogers. I will go with whatever way the committee wants me to go. I'm happy to do it either way.
I apologize. I had to step away from my desk. Can you reiterate just like a bullet point of what you just talked about? I'm so sorry, everybody.
No problem, April. So every 2 years, all barcoders in the system will have to take refresher training to ensure that they are up to date with all barcoding policies and procedures. This will hopefully reduce the number of violations that we're receiving across all types of things. It also makes sure that we're catching school libraries who do have higher rates of staff turnover.
Okay. Wonderful. Okay. And you said we have to start doing that in February?
My goal is to have the training up on the Moodle platform in February after member vote. However, you would have till the end of 2023 to complete that.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep, no problem. Whatever date you complete that training, we'll have that recorded, and then you'll get a notification roughly 3 months before that expires in 2 years as a reminder that, hey, you need to retake this. And it'll be updated continuously as things change.
And then would that barcoder training also count towards cataloging CE hours, or is that going to be separate?
I will happily count that towards cataloging CE hours.
Okay.
My goal is ideally to have it take less than 3 hours, which is half of the standard or the initial requirement. And also be able, if you're not able to complete it in one sitting, you'll be able to save your progress and come back to it. I'm totally fine with that as long as you complete it by the end of the year.
This is just a question. Is there any plan to update the Ten Commandments of Circulation?
And I'm so sorry, I didn't quite catch that, the update the...
The Ten Commandments of Circulation, yes.
Oh, yes.
Cassandra and I have been talking about that for, oh, I don't know. It's been a while now. It is on our list of things to do. We have two Share staff members that have a wonderful skill set with video technology, editing, all that magical stuff that happens. So I'm hoping to volunteer them to do that. We are just trying to, you know, obviously working out how we want it worded, like Jennifer's doing with the re-requirements for the barcoding training. At some point down the road, I would like to see something like that for all new logins, to take like a 1 hour required class just for basic circulation. But that's a ways down the road, but we will be working on that 10 commandments of circulation. it's on our to-do list, and we're hoping to get to that very soon.
Great question. Dina, do you have any other updates?
Other than the AT&T text, I can't talk, AT&T text issue. We've been, you know, we were working on that. And then also my staff and I are working on, I don't know if you guys remember these little flippy charts from back in the day. We are revamping these, getting these up into the, you know, 2022. So those will be coming down. We are doing one for Polaris, and then we've got a separate one for LEAP. We are in the final stages of making them look pretty at this point. They will be printed, and it's just basic. It's just those quick hits. It's not very detailed, but it's just like, if you need to know how to check out a book, you can go right to the page. Like Jennifer mentioned as well too, with school staff sometimes has a high turnover rate. And there's just some days that some people, you just blank out. You're like, I totally forgot how to do that. So this will be there. I'm hoping to have those finished, completed, printed, everything by the end of the year. And then if anybody has any questions, just let me know.
And,
I did put a thing in the chat. If anybody is going to ILA next week, Bywater Solutions is an exhibitor there. So, if you wanted a demo on Aspen or whatever they're doing, they will be there. And if you are there, please feel free, hunt me up. I love that we're able to get back to in person. So.
And Sarah also had a comment that she would like to see the any type of training video for circulation, or that initial policy. I think of it as a policy training video, to be more inclusive of all types of libraries, which I think is a really great point. Thank you, Sarah.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, that is a very good point.
Okay, then we will go ahead and move on. And so next up, we have new business policies and procedures. And so I just wanted to give you all an update. We are reviewing our policies and procedures, but before we do that, I thought it was really important that we make sure that in those policies and procedures, we're all using the same language to make sure that we're referring to the same things and understand what those are defined as. We do have a list of approved definitions that were sent. They were adopted in 2012, and of course they've been added to through the years. And so I sent those all for you to review. There's the first part has already been adopted. There were some changes in language, changes in like one of them was the standard that's being used for bibliographic services, a different type of reference. And there were just, you know, some things that were, we were looking at. The biggest though is the actual wording, like supplying library, requesting library. Those were actually, so these were adopted in 2013, 2014. In 2015, there were some changes with LNET code, which they have preferred terms. And so we are actually defining those instead using the LNET code, as well as the reciprocal borrowing. Reciprocal borrowing used to be defined by the LNET code, but it is not any longer because interlibrary loan is not the same thing as reciprocal borrowing. So I pulled that definition from the library law administrative rules. And so I just wanted everybody to have a chance to take a look at that. It's still, it's very much a working document. And then there's some sections where that we're talking about transitional libraries that need to be approved by the executive council. In practice, that has not, to my knowledge, has not been done, has never been done. And so we're going to be looking at policies and procedures at this committee level for circulation, but also just our overall, our overarching governance documents. So we'll probably just go kind of through the list one at a time, make sure it's the new branding, make sure that the definitions are matching what's the agreed upon definitions that we're working off of. And so if anybody saw something in there, if you had a chance to glance at it that you think needs clarified or you think needs another look, please let me know. We'll be happy to take a look at it again. Did anybody have any questions on that?
The share members, okay, I went, didn't go to the second page. It was kind of confusing the first couple of lines of the share members group definition, but now that I've got the second page there, never mind, sorry. It was like, it was, if I thought it was duplicate repeating something, so.
Okay. And that could be Susan, because like I said, it's definitely been a work in progress. It's a working document. Any other questions or comments on that?
One, excuse me, this is Sarah, and I was just thinking one area that I'm constantly trying to share, especially information with Rails libraries, is when it's not an interlibrary loan, but you receive a book from another library. So essentially you're like a receiving library of a book that you don't own, and how you are responsible or hopefully do due diligence to return that library to the library that it belongs to. So I wasn't sure if that's
all covered in the LNET interlibrary loan code. Actually, I was part of that revision team, and that was very heavily covered in the LNET interlibrary loan code. It basically states that the minute the book leaves your library, it is the responsibility of the receiving library until it gets back to the owning library, which we've had some issues with what happens when the book leaves library B, but moves on to library C before going back to library A, who's actually responsible for the book. And that was okay, addressed.
This is actually in relation to not interlibrary loan. This is just if a book is returned to another library.
Oh, you're saying like a patron checked out a book, one of your patrons checked out a book at my library, but instead of returning it to my library, they returned it to your library and then you have to send it back to me.
Exactly.
Okay.
I think that's covered under delivery.
Well, it would still be covered under the LNET code, because as soon as it leaves, like let's say it's Susan's book, as soon as it leaves, it goes to you, Sarah, and then maybe it's picked up or sent back at a public library. So let's say it goes to Lincoln Public Library District. Even though Lincoln Public Library District has put hands on it, the original requester is always still responsible until it is back to its home library. But I see what you mean, and I think having a term, returning library, perhaps, right, still to indicate that. So I'll make a note of that, a returning library.
That's a good, it's a good subtle definite difference, you know?
Right.
Because this is something that it's an uphill battle for me, especially with Rails libraries. is I literally am contacting them regularly. And many of those Rails libraries have policies that say you cannot return books from other libraries to our branch. I think that they say that, but of course, if one was returned, I'm assuming that they would do due diligence to return that. And so I just feel like if IHLS maybe is proactive in defining this and making this a clear point in our workings, that maybe other libraries might embrace that.
Yeah, and we actually had that come up, and I can't remember if it went out in yesterday's newsletter or if it's up for November's newsletter. We had a note in our IHLS and SHARE newsletters about returning, because we had a standalone library that was also having similar concerns that taking it back, and they said, well, we're not SHARE, we're not going to accept it. I think that I'm going to have to talk to Ellen, because I actually think that's part of membership, that you're willing to accept books on behalf of other libraries. But now that you say that, with Rails, I do not know what their policies are, but I'll be happy to talk to Ellen, because that's not a SHARE specific concern. But
I actually have concerns that we need to talk to the state, because I thought there are certain rules that apply to anybody who belongs to a library system in the state of Illinois that I didn't think Rails could, I didn't think you could refuse to do that.
I didn't.
That's part of being part of a shared library system.
I didn't think so either. So it sounds like, again, we actually just recently got a love letter specifically about this. And so that's why we put it out both for SHARE libraries and in the IHLS newsletter. But I will let Ellen know that it's a much more widespread issue that maybe needs to be addressed statewide. So
fabulous. I'd be happy to share with you all the documentation I have that I share with especially Chicago Public branches, but many other smaller Rails libraries as well.
Okay.
We have a situation within Illinois Heartland that we have, and we encourage patrons to return books to the library that they checked out from. It has to do with Champaign and Urbana, and things are getting lost. And then our patrons are getting irate with us when they end up in a collection agency situation where they returned our books to the Champaign Library. Champaign doesn't know where they're at. They're not in their book drop. They're not in their storage rooms. They're not anywhere.
Wow.
They're not at the delivery hub. I returned them to Champaign. Therefore, this is the patron. I'm no longer responsible for them.
Mm-mm.
Because I returned it to the Champaign. And all the conversations in the world that they're in a different automation system and don't really get checked in until they come back to an automated library within Illinois Heartland, the SHARE program. So I think it's kind of, there's an internal issue going on as well.
Wow. I've been very fortunate. I don't think I've had any cases like that, but I'm sorry for you, Janet. That's awful. So.
Well, and they're disputing their, it became pretty nasty. Mm-hmm. And they're disputing their collection. So at some point you just say, you know what, my time's not worth any more of this. And you just eat the cost of it. Mm-hmm. And but it is an issue. We just encourage them not to return items outside of us, or outside of the SHARE automation system.
Okay, well, it sounds like it is a much bigger issue. Again, I will be happy to loop in Ellen as well as some of the Rails team. Because again, Susan, I think you're correct. I don't think that libraries should be refusing that as part of membership in the library system, but I will go back to our documentation and see what exactly our membership requirements are for IHLS membership, again, since this seems like it's a much bigger issue than just SHARE. Okay, so next up, any other questions or concerns on those SHARE definitions? And do we have any other new business? Okay, and so going into old business, renewal settings. This was a big discussion last time, and so there's a lot of pros to offering the renewal settings as they are. It was a COVID change because people weren't getting items through interlibrary loan, and so it basically says now, and Dina, you know the system, really in the intricacies of it, so please stop me if I'm getting this wrong, but if you have a title out and let's say there's 100 copies and 90 are available, but there's 10 holds just that have come through during the day, let's say it's just an old backlist title that's still somewhat popular, that title will renew as long as there are available copies in the system. What we have found is that the way that we had it before, it would not allow it to renew if there were holds, just bar none. Doesn't matter how many available copies there were, it would turn it off. So during COVID, we switched it. There was a request from the O'Fallon Public Library, and I see that they're represented here today, so I'm so glad that you both could make it. Because what was happening is that they were seeing renewals when there were lots of holds, and when we investigated that, there's two different issues. The first is that things are renewing because libraries were not using the system properly. So they would say, well, this is local holds, it's showing as available, but we're not sending it out. But they didn't mark that in the system. That was somewhat of an easy fix. We were also seeing that backlist titles, so you know, the Colleen Hoover, some of the newer, the something's been made into a movie and it's become newly popular again. We were seeing that those have maybe walked off and have not, nobody knows that they're lost yet. So they're showing as in, but they're really not there. And so that was also an issue. The third thing is that the third issue in regards to that has been the item level holds. Those holds, item level holds will not override that setting. And so that I know was a big concern at our last meeting. And so the question to the group is, do we want to change it back so that if there are any holds at all, it will not renew a book, even if there are available copies to, to fill those holds.
Was the original change done with the intent, because we were in a COVID situation, to make things a little bit better for everyone?
Yes, because you couldn't get interlibrary loans, so I don't want to say it didn't matter, but people were being denied holds even though they couldn't get an interlibrary loan.
Okay, so the change was made to accommodate a COVID issue. And so we're no longer in the COVID issue in that sense. And so the question is, do we want to turn it back to the way it was before that change?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. I would be all for moving it back because the situation is not what it was, unless there's a really good reason to leave it the way it is.
This is, yes, Mary. I'm with Janet. I agree with you, Janet.
And I don't know how much this affected travel time and stuff. I guess I'm kind of the opinion that the idea that allowing a patron to renew a hold renew my book, even though there's holds, if there's other books out there that will fill the hold in another library, it's keeping the book from traveling. And so people are keeping it in their hands. I guess, I don't know. I'm kind of mixed on this. I see both sides. So I'm kind of up in the air. My whole thing is to keep the books from traveling as little as possible so that they're in the people's hands faster.
Hasn't our language always kind of been to our patrons, you can renew an item as long as there's no one waiting on the hold list for it?
Yeah, that's what we tell our patrons all the time. So.
Yeah, us too.
Yeah, we tell our patrons that too.
Yep. Yeah.
And we did the same thing even during COVID because I was just concerned that this topic would pop up, that it would be something that we'd have to, would be reverting back to. And I didn't want there to be any confusion, you know, going forward. So I'm fine with it.
I'm fine with either. So, yeah.
Cassandra, Laura has her hand up.
Laura,
jump in.
Hi. And I just wanted to say for us, the original question did come up, and we're not necessarily concerned about whether it goes back or whether it stays the same. We just want to make sure that everybody has the information. And then what to do if you do need to place an item level hold, and how to deal with that to get it to come back to you without the renewals being taken. So, you know, I don't want you guys to think that we're unhappy in any way, because that's not the case. We just want to make sure that we understand the process, and then everybody else has that information as well. Mm-hmm. And then how to circumvent that issue with the item level holds. So I appreciate you guys talking about this and being cognizant of it, because it while I agree with all of you, on one hand, we do want patrons to be able to renew items that are not going directly to fill a hold. We also want to be able to get those item level holds taken care of easily. So I wish there was an easy way to do both.
And that is actually one of the things that we discussed at the last meeting, and that has been made clear through Polaris, that these are bib level holds. And there is not a way, it would be an enhancement request, again, from language from earlier, an enhancement request through the Idea Lab to be upvoted, to be changed, which is not to say that that doesn't happen, but I don't think that that's going to be a priority for them, to be honest. So I think that if we kept it as is, that would be with the understanding that it is not going to, you would have to wait. If you were placing an item level hold, you'd have to wait till the renewals expire.
I don't know.
I've forgotten that aspect. I'm going to slide back to going like we were before, because at least then item specific holds kept their priority.
Yeah, because I know a lot of times I do a lot of item specific holds, and it's usually cataloging related. And so it's kind of frustrating to, you know, you need that item back, but it's just renewing. Yes, there's other items, but I need that one so I can do whatever I need to do. So,
well, and for me, the workaround would be, as long as everybody has that information, then you can go into an item that is currently checked out to someone, and you can change the number of renewals on it. But we just need to know as an entity that's what we need to do to get those items back. And then we need, of course, once we fix the item, to change back, turn those renewals back on. So, yeah. Again, I wish there was an easier way, but, you know, if there isn't, then whatever you guys decide, we'll appreciate it and, you know, find a workaround if necessary for the item.
Oh, Cassandra, to clarify, if we go back to the way it was before COVID, item specific holds do have preference for coming back.
Oh, you're muted.
Sorry.
So the item level holds don't really matter, because if there's a hold at all, it's coming back. Yeah. Okay. So it sounds like the committee is leaning towards changing it back. So if there's any holds, it will block a renewal. Does anybody disagree, or do we want to go ahead and take a vote?
I was going to move that we do so.
Okay. So I've got Susan. Susan, do you want to go ahead and make a motion?
I move that we change the item hold. Is that item hold renewals back to the way it was before COVID? Whatever the policy is.
Just for accuracy of our minutes, can you tell us exactly what that setting is called?
Please.
The language is renewal block if there are holds.
Renewal block if there are holds. I move that we change the renewal block to item holds back to the pre-COVID settings.
How's this that? Is Esther. I'll second that.
Okay. And then I'll go ahead and do a roll call vote. Esther Curry?
Yes.
Janet Claire?
Yes.
Mary Cordes?
Yes.
Sarah Isaacs?
Yes.
April Jensen?
Yes.
Susan McKinney?
Yes.
Sandy West?
Yes.
And Diane Yeoman?
Yes.
Okay. All in favor. And so the motion is approved. Dina, if you'd like to go ahead and just do that today, and we will work on a communication, just letting people know of that change, that it's, and the language that you guys used, that if there are holds, the renewal will not go through. So we'll make sure that everybody is aware in case they have patrons that question that.
I have it changed right now. So it's okay. Back to what it was.
Gotta love those system level settings.
Yes. Yes. I don't think that will have to go through like the day in processing, but it is back to its pre-COVID setting. So block if there are holds, it is set to yes.
Okay. All right.
I love the easy ones like that.
That's yeah. Easy. Okay. So we sent out a member survey and gathered that data, and did everybody got a chance to review that? And then the proposal regarding the loop, it's sort of a loophole about fine free libraries. Can they waive fees because it's technically their revenue? Looking at the survey results, it was, I would say, inconclusive on what members wanted. It was all across the board, and it was literally in some cases split in half. So based on that, my proposal, just I really tried to keep to common sense what our philosophies have been. So basically saying, please don't waive other libraries' fines, send them to their home library if there's dispute, and please go ahead and collect those fees. Did anybody have a difference of opinion that they'd want to discuss?
I have to say what you wrote up was very well written and very clear. And I like the way you broke things down.
I think the only thing I might suggest is if we maybe make a caveat, if that patron is moving to that new library jurisdiction, then basically they can do whatever they want. It's their patron, you know, as long as it's still within that parameters of it's not, you know, it's fines, it's not lost materials and all that. Because I know for our area, we don't see as much of, you know, going from library A, B, C, D, and that. We see a lot of moving from A to B and that. But I know in other areas, you see the back and forth and in using neighbor libraries and stuff. So I think just maybe a little clarification of if that patron is moving to your jurisdiction, you can do XYZ. And I think that would just kind of answer, you're invariably going to get that question. So
I think that's a good clarification. And maybe reiterating, in all cases, if you have questions, contact the other library and talk it out. So much would be solved if we did.
Hi, everyone. This is Ryan from O'Fallon. Would we still be able to check out to that account with those fines on there?
Well, that is a great question. If they wanted to pay it down, we would be asking that they that fine free libraries accept those payments. And I'm sorry, Ryan, because not being on this committee, you probably didn't see the proposal, but it essentially says the proposal was to ask libraries not to waive fines for another patron or another library's patron, to go ahead and collect the fines, even if you're fine free, and giving you the autonomy to decide if it's over a certain threshold, if you want to go ahead and send those fines back to the library, the patron's home library. Because you're fine free. So you don't have to do that, but you have the option to do that. I actually feel kind of strongly that I really don't want libraries refusing to take fines or sending them back to the home library. And that there wasn't a clear, there were a few libraries that did want to do that, said just you need to resolve it with your home library. But I feel like it's bad customer service and it causes a lot of frustration. So if they come to O'Fallon, I'd like for them to be able to pay the $20 to clear their account. And then if you had a policy at $20, you'll send it back to the home library. You could cut a check or you could have a policy that you just keep it as a part of your slush fund for when things get lost or you get billed for a lost or damaged item. So,
and also keep in mind that if you're sending fines back, those cannot be sent through IHLS delivery.
Oh,
they have to be mailed. That's something that delivery won't do. You can't just throw it in an envelope and throw it in the bin. It has to be, sent through mail.
I was going to say, with us being so close to Champaign-Urbana like Janet is, before Champaign-Urbana went fine-free, they had a different threshold. And I've never worried about my patrons. If the threshold at another library is higher, then obviously that patron's going to go ahead and let the patron check out. And that's fine. It's just when the patron comes back to my library, our threshold applies at our library. So I hope that kind of clarifies a little bit. But I will admit that if a patron, like I have to call Champaign-Urbana when a patron moves to St. Joe. And if they owe lost book money and they are arguing or disputing, I'm like, you have to go back and sell that with Champaign-Urbana. I can't do anything about it. That's a lost item. You have to resolve it with them before we give you a library card because it's a lost item. Fines is something different. So I hope that helps a little bit, Ryan.
Well, kind of. I will ask a follow-up question. So using a hypothetical situation, a patron from a neighboring library comes in with, let's say, a $6 fine on their account. We don't want to collect the fine here. We don't want to have to have the hassle of forwarding it to their home library. Can we just check out to that patron, letting them know, hey, you have a fine on this account. You want to get this resolved at their home library in the future. Here are your books. Have a nice day.
That's going to depend on the libraries that they're coming from, what their limit is. Because I know like some libraries have a $5 limit. So if they had a $5 limit, that $6 would block them.
Sure.
So that's kind of where the frustration comes in, like ours is $10. So if they were from my library and came there and had $6, you'd be fine. But you also,
because those patrons are going to find a way to not have to pay their fine.
Yeah. Sure. They're going to go. This sounds like it, follows the spirit of the Ten Commandments where there's a pop-up, you follow the pop-up. Is that correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Basically, yeah.
Yes, that's exactly it, Ryan. And so if they're disputing it, unfortunately, I think it's causing a block. We already have policy that states do not override a block from another library. So maybe they could pay the $5 to get under the threshold and then go to their home library to resolve the rest of it or something like that. But
actually, even just paying $1.90 or $1 and a penny would get them under, if it's a $6 fine and mine's right. A $5 limit, have them pay $1 and a penny and they're below the limit, and then they can check out at your library. I mean,
that's provided they know what their limit is, because they may have, like $40 and the library's limit's 20, but how are you going to know that?
That's true.
Right. Well, and unfortunately, we have some libraries around us with a zero limit. So as soon as there's anything on there, it gets blocked.
Yeah.
Becomes, as you can imagine, frustrating.
Actually, that gives me ammo when my patrons claim my $5 limit's too low. Zero limit? Wow.
Yeah. Well, I know when we had an Overdrive consortium, we had a couple of libraries that had that. So basically you had any fines, you couldn't check out anything from Overdrive. So yeah, it's all over the place.
Ryan, are you just not wanting to collect the fines from those other libraries and just stick them in a jar like what, someone else had said? Are you just not wanting to do that?
Well, we're not wanting to have to, how to phrase this? We're not wanting to have to change the way we do customer service, depending on which patron is standing in front of us. We try to treat all humans as humans, regardless if they're from Library A or Library B. So that's kind of where we're coming from.
I understand. And
I'm sure many of you who are on Borders with Rails or other libraries who aren't in Share, you have that. There's similar problems. Well, let me make this call and make that call. Let me see what we can do. Let me see if we can override that renewal, and those types of hassles build up over time. It's like with the amount of traffic some of our libraries see, we'd be on the phone all day asking about this fine and that fine. So from a customer service and a streamlined workflow efficiency standpoint. I would prefer this not to happen, but I understand why it's happening. My follow-up question then is this the decision that's made on this committee level? Is there a member comment? Does it go to executive beyond this, or is this it?
So based, if anybody wants to see the proposal, if they need me to resend it, I see we have Andy here as well. So Andy, if you'd like to see that, please just let me know, send me your email address. And Ryan, I just sent it to you as well. So the only actual change to our policy, and let me go back to that, give me just one moment, is very minor, because it's basically using our existing policies as a basis. So let me get the exact language. I'm so sorry. The add to the existing payments policy, which is regarding patron blocks. Any block established via the patron record will not be overridden by a transacting library. To add to the existing payment policy, the decision to waive a fine for overdue items belongs to the home library. So that's kind of closing that loophole. And so you had asked about sending it out for member comment. We did do the survey, but that's not technically member comment. We could send this proposal out for member comment and take it for a vote.
And I'm not necessarily asking that you do that. I was just curious what the plan process was.
Right.
Is it appropriate at all if Ryan had an intergovernmental agreement with those neighboring libraries? I don't know how many libraries you're talking about. That they would have an agreement with Ryan, giving him permission to waive those fines. Does that kind of go around what this committee is doing?
Well, I appreciate the suggestion, Jana. I'm probably not going to go through the hassle of creating IGAs with people. But I think it would work. You know, I think it would be appropriate and wouldn't necessarily conflict with this committee's decision because you're making a standalone separate agreement. So I think an IGA would be valid. It's not something we would pursue.
I don't see the harm in sending it out for member comment now that we've got a draft proposal and then we do a committee vote. I don't know that we need to send it to the entire membership but they could attend the meeting next month after they do the comments. You know, you let them know it's going to be on our agenda before we make the vote on whether we accept the proposed draft or not.
I also agree that it's a minor change to an existing policy, which could be handled at the committee level. But I think that's a valid point because the one piece of this that was not as clear, that it was still not very clear cut, but it wasn't exactly 50-50, was this piece of it, of waiving the fines. So... And that
so if you want, I'll move that we send it out. Do you want me to make a motion to send it out for member comment and then the committee vote on it next meeting?
I think that's a great idea.
I so move.
This is a, oh, Esther, you go. No.
I'll say.
Okay. Okay, let's go ahead and do a roll call vote. Esther Curry?
Yes.
Janet Claire?
Yes.
Mary Cordes?
Yes.
Sarah Isaacs?
Yes.
April Jensen?
Yes.
Susan McKinney?
Yes.
Sandy West?
Yes.
Diane Yeoman?
Yes.
Okay, then so moved. We will send that out for member comment with the full proposal. And Esther made a really good point, so I will include that piece about the unless they're moving jurisdictions, unless they're going to become your patron. So I will include that piece of it. We'll get the member comment, and then we can vote next meeting.
Okay. Thank you all for hearing me out on that. I appreciate it.
That's cool. Hey,
I was.
Would it be possible? I think the intergovernmental agreement idea is also, you know, I don't know if that's a good time to potentially say if somebody, I don't know, maybe at the end, once we approve it, you could add that caveat to the statement.
Yeah, I think it. I think I see what Ryan is saying. There's quite a bit of Metro East people that are coming to O'Fallon from Fairview Heights, Belleville, you know, Muskoda, even that would be challenging because they get so many different places. But if in a place that are two libraries that are very close neighbors, that they saw that a lot, they could have, you know, kind of an informal agreement in place. Yes. Feel free to waive fines. And I would not be opposed to that at all.
If I could just comment for a second, I would also, I mean, I don't know if this is an option, but I would love to see it if there was maybe you could waive up to a certain amount, like a reasonable amount. Like you could go up to $2 and that would be okay within the whole amount of share versus, you know, maybe not $10, but a lower amount so that if it is one of those threshold libraries where the amount is extremely low, that you could still, you know, kind of create that good rapport with patrons and that good customer service and not let a 25-cent fine block them from checking out that item, you know?
Laura, I think that's a great idea. And I think submit that with the member comment thing so that we have it to come back to the committee so we can all read those comments.
And Laura, since that is not a part of the original proposal, I would encourage you to do that early so other people can see that comment and can agree or disagree with that, you know, if they kind of read through the comments too, if you wouldn't mind sharing that.
And we may get more feedback from member comments than we would from survey, because gives them, survey is like, oh, it's a survey, whatever. Or well, it's survey like, isn't oh, wait, that no, they're change. Thinking about changing this now. Let me really think about this.
That's what I was thinking. The member comment's going to make the people who are like, eh, I don't need to vote on this. It's no big deal. And then they're going, wait a minute, they're changing something.
Okay. Well, I will work on this to open it up for member comment and we will get that out and we'll just review it at our next meeting.
Okay.
So at our last meeting, we had talked about material types and it was discussion on, and I think we've had this discussion before, do we have a minimum threshold for how many items need to be, like patron types is another big one. Do we have to have a certain number of libraries using that particular code? Should we set a threshold? And so we are taking it to the BIB Standards Committee. It's on their agenda for tomorrow. If anyone would like to participate in the discussion on that side, but we will bring it back next time. Dina, I know you were doing some analysis. Do you have any additional comments on that?
Nothing that's jumping out. I just had kind of, I don't even know what I was looking at one day and I saw a number and I'm like, is that all we have? Share has 91 different available material types for libraries to use. We have some material types that have less than 10 items using that material type. So that was just kind of how the conversation started. You know, like a broadside, there's 4 items, a chart, there's one, there's, you know, juvenile 3D Blu-ray, juvenile 3D Blu-ray DVD combo, juvenile 3D DVD, all those don't even have 5 items. It was just kind of starting a conversation. I like opening up cans of worms. And that was one of them.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions or thoughts about that today?
I kind of like the idea of coming up with a threshold. I have no idea how you figure out a good number that's a threshold, but I kind of agree with you. When I'm doing my statistics every month and I'm having to go through the item circulation by type or by collection, it's kind of a nightmare with the way some people break stuff down, how much stuff is broken down so minute. It's like, seriously. So anyway, I understand it, but it's in there. I don't even know how we would come up with a percentage that would make sense for what the threshold number is.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to approach it in the BIB standards committee. It was just something, you know, I wanted to kind of get the thought out there of things that we could do, because some of these aren't necessarily, we had talked about it, weren't necessarily material types. They were really different. They would be a collection, not a material type.
Right.
If that makes, you know, just coming, I'm a former cataloger, and my mind sees some of this stuff as just a collection, not a material type.
A book is a book is a book. A DVD is a DVD is a DVD. A Blu-ray is a Blu-ray is a Blu-ray. I understand. I agree with you completely on that one.
As a special library, I'd like to just make the point that there are, I feel like this is an area that can give us some unique, like, for example, we have a lot of index card sets, or, you know, I don't really like the idea of limiting just because we can limit, because there's just not very many. If it's not affecting the system, slowing down the system in some way, I don't understand why, when we can give people some freedom in a system that has 435 libraries and we're all trying to meet these very specific parameters, you know, I don't understand necessarily why limit if we don't need to.
I think for my purposes, I think that it causes undue complexity where it's not needed. Like Sarah, what you're talking about, and maybe a threshold is not the right idea, but when we have an item type that is juvenile, DVD, Blu-ray, 3D as an item type, it's just a little bit more complex, I think, than it needs to be. When, like as Dina was saying, that maybe that's really a collection, not necessarily, because there's other item types that fit that description.
Maybe it's that definition thing, defining what an item type is. I mean, it's the physical format of an item versus, you know, kind of add-on features of an item.
Okay. I think that's a great idea.
I think if, like, what I'm understanding is, I have no problem with, like, you were talking about the index card sets. That's an item type. Juvenile index card sets is a collection type. And I think that's the problem, where people have created item types that have juvenile and adult in there, when it should just be DVD Blu-ray combo or DVD 3D Blu-ray combo. And then you have a collection that's adult versus juvenile.
And we do have, and we do have a lot of types that are juvenile versus adult. And I don't know that we really want to get it. Truthfully, I don't think we want to get into that. But maybe
that was the discussion we had early on, because of having so many schools and some libraries, you know, that you want to track, keep that separate. It's a pain, but there's, you know, a juvenile of most everything. So, especially for things that circulate. I mean, I think I put all my juvenile references, just reference. I don't separate it out. I don't even know if that's a material type or not. Again, that's technically more of a class collection code, but yet it's also a something circulation is based on. So, you know, that's.
So I did send out to the Bibliographic Standards Committee the initial spreadsheet that Dina had prepared, showing, you know, that there's a handful that have less than 10, you know, items in that particular collection type, so they can see it. And we'll discuss this tomorrow as well. And then maybe we'll just bring this back to the next meeting for a full discussion after getting their recommendation also.
To be honest, I was even going to ask, how do we add material types? So,
well, that I think that we could certainly discuss that. And So if you have a material type that you'd like to add, maybe reach out to Dina and we can maybe analyze to see if there's one that already fits that, but otherwise have that conversation to be added and maybe go through committee just like we do for patron types.
I can send out, if anybody wants the list of what available material types are available, the 91 different ones, just let me know and I can email you a copy of the different material types that are currently in place.
I'd like that copy, please. This is Sarah Isaacs.
Okay.
I will send that off to you, Sarah.
Thank you, Dina.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments on this topic?
I have to say that when we first started the merger process, I think we were looking at closer to, you know, several hundred different material types. It was
a nightmare.
It was a nightmare. Yeah. It was like, oh, and collection codes. I mean,
pages of collection codes.
I had to fight for my DAR collection code. I'm like, but you're the only library. Yes, but it is a collection. Yeah. It's technically not even belonging to us. I have to have that. So yeah, it was, we met several times weeding down the list. And yeah, so that was an adventure. So
I'd forgotten about that, Esther. I do remember that. That was awful.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Before we even merged,
those were long,
I was on the
drives
committee.
And days.
Yes, they were.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, even before we merged, I was on the Lincoln Trail committee that was dealing with this stuff for the Automated Library Council, and we were dealing with thousands of some of those kind of things.
Yes. So we have come a long, long way, but as always, there's always more room for tweaking and improving.
I have a quick question. This is April. Just looking at the description, the definitions of terms, and there's material types in there, but maybe we should also, there is not type of material in there. So maybe we should make the distinction what the difference is. And that way we can make this more of a collection versus an item type of thing. Does that make sense? Did we already say that and I'm just behind the times?
Mm-mm. No, I think that's a great idea. So I'm going to make a note to also to maybe do a C also for type of material.
Right, because they are, codes. Yeah, because they're completely different, right?
Well, yeah, and I know the cataloging standards has TOM as a very important thing that we deal with so that
the icons could come up
properly.
Right. So the TOMs, the material types and the types of materials should just be universal. And those should be definitely defined and specified and so forth. Right.
Well, the TOM are very focused. So you have like sound recording. You don't differentiate between MP3.
C. Actually, it does.
Well, not as far as, well, it does more now, but I think when you're looking at it from the item record and what's showing up there for patrons who are looking, and there's also talking about doing away from Bib Services, doing away with putting in that sound recording.
I thought they had stopped talking about that because of the whole... with the icons
with the caveat that is they're eventually going to go away one day.
Well, I'm just
I was
just thinking for the sake of this argument, we should just define that term and maybe have it so everybody knows in circulation, because I know not everybody's in both circulation and cataloging, and maybe that would help clarify everything, having that term, just defining that what they both are and helping with those collections and so forth.
Yeah. I think that's a great idea, April. Thank you. And I think, and Jen or Dina might chime in. I really do think that it, especially for the, again, the idea of simplicity's sake for our catalogers, I think this will be very helpful if we clarify this for them.
Yes.
And so for Sarah, the things that are really truly unique, like that people do have vinyl records and they're not getting rid of that collection. Yes, we still need to have, even if there's only seven in the whole system, for example, that's not something that can be covered anywhere else. It's not description of the collection or a special piece of that collection. It's still the actual physical manifestation of the item. So
I don't know, with vinyl records making a comeback, yeah, I wouldn't get rid of that. I mean, I now kick myself that I got rid of all the vinyl records of my library years ago, you know.
Right. Yep. Okay. Any other comments on that? All right, great. And so do we have any other old business? Okay, hearing none, do we have public comment?
I have a question for everybody. We have a patron who checks out collections of DVDs constantly. And do you guys have a limit of how many DVDs, not only yours, but from other libraries that they can check out? She currently has 30 DVDs out, and some of those have six DVDs in them. Do you guys have a limit for patrons?
We actually had our library. We limit to six, I think.
We had a situation with a patron who continued to do that. Cassandra, you probably remember this, and would have 100 DVDs on hold, and there was nothing, no parameters that we had in place. So we had to put parameters in place. And I believe we put ours at 25.
Okay.
We have a limit of 10 in our library.
Have you had a lot of backlash from patrons or anything like that?
We've had a limit of five up until about 5 or 6 years ago. Okay. And so when we moved it up to 10, everybody was happy. So no, yeah, we haven't had any.
Okay.
We've always had a limit as well. So they're just used to it. We have increased it in the past and may need to do it again. But
so when you guys have these limits, is it just go on.
I was just going to say, I'm like Philo. I don't have a limit, but I usually try to encourage people if they like want to carry stuff out, like 50 items, I analyze the situation, but yeah. I don't have limits officially. I just kind of remind people the checkout periods.
Well, we have four limit. If you can only check out four of our DVDs at a time, but we don't have any limit on how many they can check out from other libraries. And so I'm just debating if I really would like to put a limit on what they can check out from other libraries.
So April, because it actually is two different pieces in the system. Mm-hmm. One is how many you can place on hold or request, and then how many you can actually check out. So just to note in the comments, Donald, Don Pippin from Philo says they do not have a limit. Andy says Belleville has a limit of five per account. And Tammy from Mahomet says Mahomet's limit is 10. I think it'd be a good idea to maybe, and Dina can probably help you with this, run a report to see how many, you know, and what we did with Janet is maybe get a report of how many people on average are checking out, like what are your super users mm-hmm. doing, and kind of give you a guide of what's appropriate and or what's most common, maybe. Okay. And then from there, you can see, you know, how outside of that this one super user might be. And another mm-hmm. consideration is how often is she abusing it and running up fines?
Yeah.
Hey, April, what library are you from?
Lincoln Public.
That's what I thought. Yeah, because just looking at your parameters, there's no limit on
DVDs
or like DVDs or anything. So shoot me an email.
I was going to say, I'm going to call you later on.
Yeah.
It also might be beneficial to put that out to the one of the listservs and get more feedback of what other libraries are doing too. Because it sounds like there's a pretty wide variety. So
yeah. The last public library I worked at had a monstrous DVD collection and patrons could take three. It was three for 3 days.
I'll so
it was
be honest.
Three. They can only check out three at a time. So, but libraries are very possessive of their DVDs. And I
know what's funny is
a great term, but they like those DVDs.
We're very generous, but we have grudges, and we are possessive at the same time.
I was going to say my super user that abuses the system is books. She's a teacher. And so when she's doing a subject matter, it's like, we'll get, I swear to God, 50 to 100 items in like 2 days. And she waits till 10 till closing to check everything out. So anyway,
they all do. Yeah.
I will take this opportunity. And maybe if anybody
my
has
clock time is broken over here.
maybe if anybody has time afterwards and wants to stick around, but the Biblio Plus is that new streaming platform that you can offer through your library, that it's unlimited viewing for, and it's not going to be the, you know,
normal stuff.
It's not going to be feature films necessarily, but they do mm-hmm. have BBC and Hallmark as part of them. And so if anybody is really participating in that and wanted to share how that's going, you know, that might
be. We just went live 10 days ago, and I've been advertising it in Wildberry and on Facebook, and I've had people coming in getting the information on how to log on and stuff. I haven't actually gotten any feedback from patrons on what they found out there. I will admit that when I went out to look after we went live, I didn't see the BBC collection stuff yet, but I know Chris told me they had signed the agreement when I negotiated with him at the end of August. I didn't hear about the Hallmark, but that will be a big thing for my people too. So, but I did sign up, and it ended up not being that bad of a price. I was pretty happy.
Yeah. Okay. Does anybody have any, so we were on public comment, any other comments and any announcements? Okay. So our next meeting will be Thursday, December 8th at 10 a.m. via Zoom. Esther, I'll turn it back over to you.
All right. No further business. This meeting is adjourned at 11:25.
Great. Thank you all so much for the great discussion today. I appreciate everybody's input.
Bye, everybody. Have a good day.
Bye. Bye.
But we can stay on if we want to learn about Biblio. Okay.
Okay. I thought so. That's why I was sticking around to hear about it.
I'll keep it on. Let me send Cassandra a message real quick. One second.